Welcome to the Foresight Health Roundup Podcast, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Berta, news editor at Foresight Health. It is Thursday, January 9th. Belated Happy New Year. We've been on break for 2 weeks, and this is our first show of the new year. As I'm sure you feel in your bones, it's going to be an interesting year for many reasons. Our incompetent fascist dictator, who 77 million people voted for, says he wants to take over Canada, Greenland, and the Panama Canal, with military force if necessary. Maybe we'll have to do a show on the healthcare systems in those countries. I hope not. But for now, let's stick to healthcare in the U.S. Sharing their big predictions for healthcare in 2025 are Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Julie Murchison, partner at Transformation Capital. Hi, Dave. Hi, Julie. How you two doing this morning? Dave?
Well, first, Happy New Year to you both. Buckle up. 2025 is here. But on a more sobering side, these wildfires in Los Angeles are absolutely terrifying. We've had friends that have had to evacuate, and it's just keeping our eyes on that and hoping it resolves without too much more damage. But I'm not sure that's possible.
Yeah, very scary. I've seen a lot of that footage. Thanks, Dave. Julie, how are you?
Gosh, it's been a weird start to the year. That's for sure. I would say that I'm relaxed having gone dark over the holidays and really dug into quality time with my kids. But I feel like this week has been, you know, hitting the ground more than running.
Yeah, the switch went on January 6th. That's for sure. Okay, before we look ahead to 2025, let's briefly talk about your holiday break. Dave, tell me one of the best things that happened to you over the break, personal or professional.
Well, we have enough holiday decorations to actually open a little Christmas store, but because we're working to get our house on the market, we did a very minimalist Christmas. All we did was put a wreath on the front door and get one of those ceramic trees, one of those small ceramic trees with lights on it, and put it in the window. It actually looked like the top of a big tree. And I got to say, short prep time, short recovery time on that. And that was all pretty great.
You're setting a new trend for the future there. Julie, how are you? What one good thing stood out over the holidays, personal or professional?
Oh, well, I would say on the personal front, I had great success in a family gift this year that centered around pickleball. And it has just paid hours and days of humor. So nothing special, but, you know, when you get your family with like a full family gift, it feels really good.
Ah, good score. Do you have one of those attachments to your racket that you could pick up the ball with without bending over?
Dave, I'm not that old yet, okay?
Oh, okay. All right. I have that on mine, so.
Just watch out for the Achilles. I know three people that have ruptured their Achilles playing pickleball.
Yeah.
All right, be careful. Well, I'll go personal. And Dave, this gets to your point about Christmas decorations. We had all ours down and packed away by January 3rd. And that's a new Berta record that will be hard to beat because, similar to you, our house looked like a Christmas store exploded in almost every room of the house. I do miss the Christmas classes, though. I could have those up all year. Okay, let's talk about healthcare in 2025, hopefully not through rose-colored glasses, and there's your strained transition. Dave, first tell me about your mood regarding healthcare this year. Are you pessimistic, optimistic, skeptical, cynical, whatever? Maybe use that aura ring you have now, and then tell me why you feel that way, and then give me one or two big predictions for healthcare in 2025.
Yeah. I don't think I'm any of those words, Dave.
Okay.
I think what I am is alert and even leaning forward in my chair to see what happens. Let me give you a little context. So I've just been nonstop reading about artificial intelligence. And last weekend, I started reading Henry Kissinger's book, Genesis, and I just couldn't do it anymore. I think I'm up to my eyeballs in artificial general intelligence, super intelligence, and all the impact. And so I went into my Kindle library and I saw a book by Michael Lewis called The Fifth Risk. I had no idea what it was about, but I said, I like Michael Lewis. I started reading it. Well, it turned out it's about the transition from the Obama administration to the Trump administration in 2016. And the fifth risk is project management. And he does a very good job, as he always does, to demonstrate that one of the characteristics of the Trump administration in 2016, and I'm sure is true here now in 2025, is a tendency to take short-term solutions to long-term problems. And he kind of demonstrates that pretty categorically through the Energy Department and the Agriculture Department. I haven't finished the book yet. And it's a real tribute to people inside the government professionally working hard, not seeking limelight. And normally I'd say that would be a risk in healthcare, except that the incentives are so screwed up. The level of government capture by industry incumbents is enormous. So throwing some grenades into the system, I think, might actually be a big thing, or not only be a big thing, but do some good, even though it will trigger some chaos. I did hear from Paul Kusserow, my co-author on the new book, that Brad Smith is running DOGE, the Department of Government Efficiency, for Elon Musk. And if that's true, I haven't been able to validate it, but if that's true, that means healthcare is going to be target numero uno in the government as the new Trump administration comes in and looks for ways to cut spending, to afford the tax cuts, and do the other things they want to do. So I'm leaning forward. I'm looking at this. I have my eyes open. I don't expect that there's necessarily a lot of long-term thinking going into what's happening, but they're ready to throw some Molotov cocktails on the situation. So with that as background, you know, a couple of things that I'm paying attention to. I think it's going to be a bad year for specialists. First of all, RFK is talking about taking away the AMA's power in determining how CMS, Medicare pays doctors, specialists in primary care. And when LBJ gave them that power in the mid-60s, one-third of the physicians in the country were specialists and two-thirds were primary care. Today, that's reversed. The first Trump administration, when it was doing payment reform, reshuffled payment in favor of primary care physicians at the expense of specialists. Biden and Congress smoothed that over in 2021. There's another pay increase coming, or at least on the docks right now. I got to believe that's going to shift toward primary care physicians. And honestly, the AMA's main purpose in life. I mean, I bet neither of you know, and I don't know any doctors that are members of the AMA. Their main purpose in life is to divvy up the government spoils. It's a little like that scene in The Godfather 1, where Vito Corleone brings all the families in New York together and they divvy up prostitution and drugs in the regions. That's basically what the AMA has been doing with the payments to the benefit of specialists at the expense of primary care doctors, which is part of why we have had this shift, and we actually need far more primary care doctors than we do specialists. So bad year for specialists. Second prediction, 2024 was a big year for GLP-1 drugs. I think 2025 is going to be even bigger. 1 in 8 Americans have tried the drugs, and I think the consensus is they work. They're almost a miracle drug. There's incredible demand, and it's interesting, the people that are on these drugs are buying better food, so more kale, fewer Oreos, and drinking less alcohol. So that's starting to shift the market a little bit. The price, however, is astronomical. You know, $1,000 a month for these things. There have been studies out that show that Novo Nordisk, the Danish company that produces Ozempic and Wegovy, that it costs them less than $5 a month to produce this stuff. And you can buy it in Germany for $59. This is something Bernie Sanders is all over. And so I think we're going to see real pressure on the price of that to meet the demand. They've already kind of relented in letting Hims and Hers and Weight Watchers sell the GLP-1 drug, compounded drug, at a discount, like $150 a month. So I think we're tired of making Denmark rich, and demand is going to come up, and this is going to change. We're going to meet that demand, and that will change buying habits and trigger a little more emphasis on health at the expense of healthcare. And maybe that even means less spending on chronic disease.
Well, comparing organized medicine to organized crime.
Yeah.
Right? There you go. Julie, any questions for Dave?
Well, Dave, great, fun, good, strong predictions. I hear so much concern about regulatory change. I'm not quite sure what to think of all of the hype there, but what do you think is going to happen to MA?
Oh, I think MA is in the bullseye for Doge and the new Trump administration coming in. There were a couple of reports at the end of last year that really highlighted the abuses in the MA program. The Wall Street Journal did a year-long investigation, and they had their summary report right after the new year. It was called How Health Insurers Racked Up Billions in Extra Payments from Medicare Advantage. And, you know, here are kind of the headlines. Insurers packed on diagnoses that made them money. Insurers sent nurses to find diagnoses that doctors hadn't. Insurers got paid to cover patients who were already getting their health care elsewhere. Doctors who work for United Health generated billions of dollars in extra payments for their employer by adding more diagnoses. Sicker patients who needed expensive treatments like nursing home care left Medicare Advantage at high rates back to traditional Medicare, suggesting that insurers have been denying them costly coverage. That's called lemon dropping. So that, you know, that came out first week in January. And then in October, the Senate had this big report, and the title was Refusal of Recovery, How Medicare Advantage Insurers Have Denied Patients Access to Post-Acute Care. I just think the insurers, and rightly so, are in the hot seat for all this abusive manipulation of the regulations to their benefit at the expense of both the taxpayers and the beneficiaries.
A reporter friend of mine uses the phrase screwed the pooch. I think that perfectly sums up what happened with Medicare Advantage. So thanks, Dave. Great response. Okay, Julie, you are up. What word describes your mood for healthcare in 2025? Tell me why you feel that way, and then give me your one or two big predictions for the year.
Well, I think that there's going to be a lot of action and activity this year, and then somewhat resigned, honestly, to what feels like a weird kind of permanent new normal and on a more macro basis that I guess maybe spills over to healthcare. I don't know. I'm trying to figure it out. It's still too early into the year. All right. I have two big buckets of predictions. One, I guess these are both pretty optimistic, I have to say. So I don't know why I'm feeling so resigned. The first is that this is the year of the platform. And this is largely focused around, you know, all those tech innovations focused on operational efficiencies. Health systems will probably see for the first time some larger brand names that are kind of puffed up and look a little bit more like large companies that could start to present alternatives to improving operational efficiencies in the category of upgrading, you know, core legacy business technologies. On the health plan side, you know, I think it's largely going to be about how they use Gen AI and how that helps them almost take advantage of a new way of thinking about platforms of information inside the health plan. So here, the platform, I think, is big on that side. I also think, Dave, to your point about GLP-1s, now there are so many companies that are trying to manage metabolic, and the potential to see a roll-up or combination of some of these, even some, you know, kind of, dare I say, verticalization in this space. I think we'll see that around GLP-1s. And this week, our friend Glenn Tolman at Transcarent buying Accolade, you know, this is part of a platform in real-time navigation, as what Accolade has been doing has really slid sideways for the last couple of years and has become less sexy. And now that it's being rolled into a novel benefit management platform like Transcarent, navigation is going to see a new day in the sun. So Glenn Tolman strikes again, and I think contributes to my prediction that this is the year of the platform. My second prediction is that this is the year that the consumer shows up in their health through so many other avenues that they now have. And of course, the they in this prediction is really the worried well. This is not a, you know, cross-population prediction, but we're seeing already consumers taking back the pharmacy. There's all sorts of direct-to-consumer compounded access. We've talked about Hims, Hers, Roe, Noom, all this for GLP-1s. We're seeing Lilly and Pfizer and others, you know, create direct-to-consumer channels and use some of these platforms. But with Cuban and other similar PBM solutions, you're seeing people find their way to drugs that they can afford. We're seeing I mean, just more and more focus on longevity. I don't know if you haven't read the book Outlive, you might be in a minority these days. And although we see a lot of hype around RFK talking about wellness and nutrition, there's a lot of money going into longevity and wellness. So we're seeing another wave there. We're seeing healthcare Amazon style, right? If you can get your healthcare through Amazon, like what's more consumer than that? Now that everything I just talked about is really starting to make at-home testing a real thing for people, not just for fun, but for actual care delivery. And with the medications being more accessible at home, like there's a convenience here that's starting to really brew. And of course, for the worried well, like there's a med spa in every corner. It's almost like McDonald's these days in many suburban areas. So I think a lot of people think that's healthcare, and we're, you know, it's kind of somewhere in between. And I think we've been talking about this as kind of a horror story, and I think it is, but consumers are really, I think, feeling and will increasingly feel in the next few years that vaccines are flexible. They don't need to do them. So if consumers are feeling like they have flexibility to do things that are against what science, the FDA, their doctors are saying, we're going to see an entirely new consumer show up in managing health, and it may or may not be a good thing. And, you know, I mean, consumers are going to do what consumers want to do. So if they feel like it's optional, I don't know. We have, it's just, it's going to be an interesting way that we see consumerism, and not the way that I think healthcare has been looking for it.
So invest in iron lungs.
Perhaps.
Thanks, Julie. Dave, any questions for Julie?
Well, first a comment, just that's really interesting, Julie. I think what you're describing is this new era of personalized medicine informed by data and empowered consumers. And I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, I've started wearing one of these retail continuous glucose monitors, and I'm just stunned by what spikes my glucose. Who knew oatmeal was so bad, right? And so we now have the ability to make better decisions tied to our individual genomes like never before. And that's only going to get better and more accessible. I bet Glenn has that built into his platform going forward. You ended up your excellent summary by observing that vaccines could become optional to consumers. Play that out a little bit. And what does that do to the marketplace? And what is the potential public health impact of that?
You know, I started thinking about this in a weird way last night when someone I was talking to pointed out that Vashon Island, which is a little island, you know, right off Seattle, has the highest per capita non-vaxxer, you know, rate in the country. And I thought, huh, that's interesting. So what's going to happen on this little island? Like, will they be their own little New Zealand during COVID where they'll all be impacted or they'll be inoculated by effectively, you know, being on their own? I mean, there's no way they can do that. So what's going to happen?
It's scary, right?
It's scary, yeah. So then I think you do play out like, okay, if we're not taking vaccines, we will absolutely see greater, you know, healthcare intervention, drive up in cost, higher acuity, more death. I mean, the whole thing. And these pockets, like where I used to live in Marin County, I bet we see these pockets actually spin out of control in ways that really kind of shift the health status and the health risk of certain populations. Mm. And on the flip side, I had dinner over the holidays with someone in the pharmaceutical industry who was talking about the impact to some of the companies with the COVID vaccine when they just kept pushing, like the need to get revaxxed every year and push and push and push. And everyone in America is like, yeah, yeah, good luck. I'm not going to do that. Like COVID's over, right? So when you look at the implications of now all these companies that have vaccines and get into a commercial stance every year, I mean, it's a big effort for them to go through a commercialization launch of this year's vaccines or of, you know, a set of vaccines for an expected population. We're going to see massive commercial impact to the pharma companies if, in fact, a lot of people show up and decide not to vax. So it will have weird implications.
That is pretty scary. And that kind of ties into my prediction for the year. My mood is optimistic. I know that may come as a shock because I think we'll get through the year without anything drastic happening to vaccines or Medicare.
Wow.
I think RFK Jr. and Dr. Oz are such unlikable uninformed people who spread false and misleading information that, even if they're confirmed as HHS secretary and CMS administrator, they won't be taken seriously and they won't be able to do much damage to public health or the Medicare program, at least not until April when I sign up for traditional Medicare. I can't wait till next week's show. All right, let's talk about other big healthcare news that happened this past week. It wasn't all bad, was it? Julie, what else happened that we should know about?
Well, I don't know if you saw yesterday the announcement from Blue Shield California that they have now completely restructured into, you know, dare I say, somewhat of a united health group-like structure where, and someone got paid a ton of money for this branding, but they've decided that Ascendium is going to be their holding company that Paul Markovich will, I think, effectively run. And then they have their health plans, Blue Shield of California, and their Promise Health Plan, which is their Medicaid health plan. They're separating those two, obviously, for, I think, specific branding reasons. And then they'll have Stellaris, which is the commercialization arm, where they come up with innovations to really assist the health plans and to sell potentially to other health plans. So, big news in California.
I had not read that. We'll keep an eye on that. Thanks, Julie. Dave, what other news is worth mentioning?
Well, I think we mentioned that the company that a few prominent health systems had founded, Longitude Health, and they're going to spin off three separate companies, specialty pharma, consumer-based revenue cycle management, and value-based care. And what I just heard this week is that Craig Sammet, the healthcare veterans who've seen it from all sides, is going to be the new CEO of the value-based care company they're creating. So that's interesting and kind of, Julie, plays to your platform concept from earlier in the show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Interesting restructuring. Thanks, Dave. And thanks, Julie. That is all the time we have for today. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed on today's show, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. You also can subscribe to the Roundup on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Don't miss another segment of the best 20 minutes in healthcare. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Berta for Foresight Health.